For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
We've been talking about the Song of the Precious Mirror Samadhi for a pretty long time now. And I'm not sure I have a whole lot to add about the poem itself, other than to say, just note that it's a song, it's a poem, it could even be the hymn of the Precious Mirror Samadhi. It's a poem of reverence and encouragement to practice. And I thought I would talk a little bit about thusness and see if I could throw some light on it a little bit and talk about our practice with the hope that I don't spend too much time and that it helps you read the poem and get a little more out of it. The themes of the poem are really set out just in the first line, that the Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, preserve it well. And the first question we have, since Dongshan is not really writing an explanation of what thusness is, it's not some sort of lesson or philosophical treatise, is really, what is thusness? Thusness is a term that's used particularly in scriptures venerated in East Asia. And if you want to read, for example, the Lankavatara Sutra or the Treatise on the Awakening of Faith, there are good translations of both of those. Red Pine had a translation of the Lankavatara Sutra published in the last year, and that's been very well received. And thusness is a key concept in both of those scriptures. Thusness is translated in English sometimes as suchness. Neither of those seems to gives you very much to work with. I mean, what does that mean? But in the scriptures, thusness is sometimes viewed as something of a synonym for emptiness. That's not quite right, though. And sometimes, depending on the circumstances, you could and the thrust of the scripture, the reference would be to Buddha nature or just to Buddha. In the case of references to Buddha, it's the same idea as sort of, I won't say conceptually, but there's a different attitude of veneration of this, of what brings us to freedom. And for most of us Western Zen students who don't spend a lot of time with the scriptures, probably the first time we run across the concept at all is in koans, especially in when Jiaozhou and the dog, when the monk asks Jiaozhou, does a dog have Buddha nature? And Jiaozhou says, no. You know, in the scriptures, and sometimes in the koans, you read them, and they talk about thusness being all-encompassing. And especially in the Treatise on the Awakening of Faith, which is very interesting, you have that idea of thusness encompassing everything. And the treatise itself gets pretty close to almost suggesting that thusness is some sort of pure substance that manifests itself in us and all of the things in the world, and that if you really understood correctly, you'd look at something and think, well, that's not really Jeremy, that's thusness there. That's some sort of substance manifesting itself. And that's especially true when you read the language that thusness is beyond all dualities of self and other and conceptual forms. I think it would be fair to say that no one has started reading koans without thinking of thusness and suchness and Buddha as some sort of nebulous substance like water that's manifesting itself in waves, and that's how we try to get to the understand the koans. And in the literature as well, the scriptures that talk about thusness, there are images that encourage that as well, that talking about the golden lions, images that are made of molded gold. And so, you know, is it gold? Is it an image of a lion? What is it? It encourages you to, certainly makes you think that way. But that's not what Dongshan thinks. He's never for a moment going to say that the things of this world sort of dissolve into some substance, some universal that is more real than the things themselves. And I tend to think a little bit with another image just to help avoid that problem. And that is, you know, everybody's familiar with the phrase, you can't see the forest for the trees. And in English, that usually means something like, you shouldn't focus on some individual thing too much to understand what's really going on. You need to understand the common, you get the big picture, you understand the commonalities to all things of that type, and you look into the forces that are affecting all of them in order to understand it. And that's not, well, that's certainly helpful. That's not what I'm going to misappropriate the image and talk about just a little bit about the difference between a forest and the trees. You know, Buddhism has never been willing to admit that there is such a thing as a tree. You know, in early classical Buddhism, they'd look at a tree and they'd say, well, their dharma is kind of like atoms, and they come together to form wood fibers, and those are come together to create the rings of the tree and layers of the tree, and then there's bark, and there are branches and leaves and roots. This isn't a thing. It's a composite of all different kinds of elements. So it's really fairly meaningless to talk about a tree. And the other approach that early classical Buddhism would talk about is that change also throws the existence of a tree into question. You know, you have a seed and a sapling and a tree, and while there is continuity, it's kind of hard to think of them as the same being. So Mahayana thought doesn't contest any of that, but the thrust is very different. Mahayana tends to think of in the context of the entire world and an environment, and so a tree or a bush and so on is really, it's in a forest. And there, the idea of a tree is just an abstraction because it isn't alone. It's thrown its roots into the ground and it's sucking up water and nutrients, and there's shade being cast by other trees that are affecting how it's growing, how the lichens are growing on the tree, where the sun is coming and what direction it's going to throw leaves out into, their interactions with animals and smaller plants in the forest and so on. So that's the only way to really understand what this is to understand that it's not a tree, but it's something that's in relationship and interacting constantly with lots of other similar things. Now, at the same time, you don't say that that's what the forest is, but there's a difference between, right, a forest just isn't just a collection of trees. And so they are certainly similar, but they're not identical. There's no forest separate from the trees and the plants and all the other things that are in the forest. And there's certainly no tree that's separate from this forest. But you would never say that the forest is manifesting itself as a tree. And you would really never ask, does a tree have forest nature? Okay? So all that's pretty abstract, and those ideas and images, both in the Song of the Precious Mirror Samadhi that I've been talking about, are helpful somewhat. They throw some light on this. I mean, I think it's fair to rely on Dongshan and say, although thusness is not constructed, it is not beyond words. There are things you can say about thusness and the world fruitfully and accurately to help us understand our place in the world and its meaning for us and our meaning in the world. But as that's all talk about thusness and images about thusness, and like Dongshan says, the meaning does not reside in the words. The point is your personal realization of thusness. So what's going on there? What Dongshan says is the meaning does not reside in the words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. And you ask yourself, okay, wait a minute, what am I trying to do here? I'm trying to reach this pivotal moment, because if I have this pivotal moment, I'll have a more authentic understanding of who I am. I'll dissolve some of these illusory ideas I have. And also, the mind that's caught up in these illusory ideas and the chain of thoughts and emotions going on is the same mind that is completely caught up in viewing our life out of neediness and fear. So if I can drop that, if I can step outside of that, drop off all of these suffering and defilement, I'll also realize, be aware of who I am and how the world works, and be able to live better. So we have to get to this pivotal moment, but how do you do that? And our reaction, given who we are, is that this pivotal moment requires some big change and big effort. And certainly classical Buddhism would agree that you are going to work very, very hard, try very, very hard with great effort for a very long time to change your mind and shape it, to experience special states of mind and realize special things, to have special experiences. That hasn't been the view of the Zen school and much of East Asian Buddhism, which would say you are already awake. And Dongshan agrees with that. He says the Dharma of thusness is intimately transmitted by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it. Preserve it well. You already have it. And the significance of that for us, among other things, is that there's a message that this truth of thusness is close at hand. It's not something that's distant from us. And accordingly, our practice is very different from the meditation practice of earlier Mahayana and early classical Buddhism, with these concentration exercises and meditation, which is the analysis of all the parts of the body, from every kind of fluid that's contained in the body to your hairs and bone and nails and skin and teeth, all of it. We can become aware of thusness, awaken to thusness, by stepping outside of this chain of thinking that we're caught up in, and the neediness and fear just by sitting here and directing our attention to what is here right now. Because thusness is here and now. It is just this. And so our practice is to sit and settle and be aware, be awake. We'll say be aware. We're not sitting there as an observer. We're part of this. We are awake, encompassed by and with just this. And that requires effort to do it, but it's not a push or a strain. It's the effort of patience and perseverance. You know, we sit on the cushion, we sit upright, we don't move, we breathe, we feel our breathing come in and out. And then we drift away and we come back. We come back to just this, to the experience of thusness, right here, right now. And we resolve to stay with it. It's not a way of getting somewhere else. It's just being aware of where you are now. If you're confused right now, if you're sleepy, tired, feeling sort of dull, well, that's thusness. You pay attention to that. You're awake to your sluggishness, to your sleepiness. But that's all it is. And there's the process of we fall asleep and we come back. We fall asleep, we come back, and we direct our attention to something. Or make sure we're sitting here and now, with a little special attention on our breathing, to make sure we're directed here and don't get lost in the thoughts. And this is the same thing we can do, part of the emphasis on in Zen has always been life off the cushion, and the same awareness, awakening to thusness, awakening to this moment, is certainly available to us when we're not on the cushion. And the emphasis in Zen has always been do what you're doing, one thing at a time, not narrowing in on it, trying to concentrate, oh my God, I'm chopping the vegetables, I'm going to be narrowed in on the knife and the carrot. It's be awake right here and right now, undistracted, chopping the carrot. That's all it is. It's the manifestation of our natural mind now. It's a willingness, or even just a questioning. I think, you know, there's the line in the Precious Mirror Samadhi about the drumming and singing begin together, which other people have translated other interesting ways, that it's like a blow and a shout. You know, if you pound somebody on the shoulder and they go, ow, you know, simultaneous. Or the question and response arise together, are simultaneous. And I like that one because that's very much our practice of sitting and saying, well, what's it like? Or how does it feel to be sitting here upright and breathing? Just directing the attention in that way is to instantly have awakened to here, now, and thusness. So it is something that comes to us that is very natural to us. So I'm going to leave it at that and just encourage you to keep sitting. Don't try so hard. Be easy on yourself. And realize you are awakening and that you are awake and you will continue to awake. And just resolve to stick with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Douglas. Well done. Comments, questions, responses?
Early on in the talk, just to clarify, I think you were saying something about emptiness and suchness, and I'm not sure I understood maybe the distinctions you were referring to or similarities.
I think conceptually they're very much the same, but the emphasis on emptiness is the absence of a fixed nature in anything. Mm-hmm. That everything is contingent and exists in relation and dependence upon and in interaction with other things. And thusness, I would say, is more a term used to reflect the dynamic, all-encompassing presence of reality. Is that fair, do you think?
Okay, so what would you say is the difference?
Are you emphasizing the hollowness of phenomena, or are you emphasizing the vivid presence and reality of what's here?
You said that one would not ask the question, does a tree have forest nature?
Mm-hmm.
Does a tree have forest nature?
What do you think?
I don't know.
That's a good answer. You know, the experience of thusness in your sitting is fundamental to understanding koans. And as you do the practice more and more, it becomes easier and easier, I think, or koans become clearer and clearer as you think of them as pointers to becoming awake and engaging with each moment. And that when you do that, the things that you are with you right now are manifesting what is real, and in a sense are preaching the Dharma. That's something you see in, you read about in Dogen, you read about that in Dongshan. And the koans keep bringing you back to activity and things in this moment. And activity and words as expressions of here and now, this reality. You know, there's so many stories. What is Buddha nature? Or what is Buddha? You know, the cypress tree in the garden. This robe I'm weighing here weighs 3 pounds. Or in the case of Juji would, every time anyone would come and ask him about the Dharma, he would just raise his finger. Over and over again, just raise his finger. It's sort of an elegant answer because it's true, it's a manifestation in this moment of this is happening.
Can you say more about how this finger does or does not point to thusness? Or about that story?
Well, you don't want to say that it is thusness, right? But it is not separate from thusness. Some of the scriptures would say that there would be a thusness of the finger. But it steers you to this moment, here and now. And it's elegant because it's just a little thing that is a demonstration of this nebulous, big concept. Everything, the entire universe, is manifested with that.
What's the difference between this and this?
That story is so popular so important, or so elegant, that it's the only only koan to appear in Mumonkan, the Blue Cliff Record, and the Book of Serenity, except Nan Chuan Kills the Cat. And even Dogen gave a talk about that, where he talked about Zhu Ji and how his demonstration was a message that extended throughout the universe. And he asked the monks, do you want to see Zhu Ji? And he was silent. He just And he said, would you like to hear his talk? He was quiet, so we went. Yes?
This will probably sound like a facetious question, but it's not. You know, as the text says, you know, whether teachings or approaches are mastered or not, reality constantly flows. Whether we are awake to it or not. It's like when we're in Zazen and we drift off, it's not really like we're somewhere else. We just don't exactly kind of lose track of where we are.
Yeah.
So what drives the effort to be awake? Why would one make that effort? You're never outside it never goes away. Reality is constantly flowing. Lots of people in the world seem to get by fine without coming here often and sitting.
Speaking personally, I'll say that our mind is, or as you say, it is already awake. Sometimes we're distracted or confused, or we look away from the reality of this moment, our reality in our life. But in those moments in which we are awake to the world and reality, to some extent we have dropped off the flowing river of thinking and the grasping and the fear and anger and neediness. It doesn't mean, obviously, that we don't think, or that we don't feel anger or fear or hunger or pleasure or pain. But there's certainly a different quality to it and a different perspective. That feels authentic and seems to give a vision of how we might engage with our life. So, I think that's why.
Good, thank you.
Phil.
Oh, thank you. I guess I've spent most of my life as a political philosopher thinking about the idea of a pivotal moment. And I sometimes think people who think about politics sort of fall into two groups, and one is more or less coming up for justifications for the way things are, and others thinking about how things could be and what would it mean to get to some better state of things. And just thinking about this idea of the pivotal moment, I just wondered if you think there's not only preparing for that moment, but or at least sitting with an openness to that moment and letting it be, so to speak, with the notion that any moment could be that moment. But also I wonder, just philosophically, if there's a way to think about that moment where there's some element of givenness to it that is that isn't a kind of theological sort of thought, that there's some messianic kind of thing or even some cosmic Buddha that gives it, you know, maybe there's Buddha nature, maybe there's the Dharma, etc., but that it doesn't work in a sort of theological way, but that there's still some sort of givenness to it that's not entirely determinable by our practice, and especially our tendencies to strive and make things happen.
Yeah, I think you've made a couple of interesting points, and I think the idea of the givenness of it, I think it is key. That the awareness is there, and the issue is maybe almost discovering the nature of that awareness or having it pointed out to us. I think it's not an artificial experience and an unusual experience. I think people wake up to reality all the time and don't recognize its significance, you know, and it's like Dogen saying, you know, you may not be aware of your own awakening. And I think that's absolutely true, that there's nothing that happens to us during Zazen that hasn't happened to us before, and this is a matter of sitting and intentionally being receptive to it and being prepared to stay with it on a sustained basis. And I think that, you know, the more we sit on the cushion, the more ordinary this seems to become. And, you know, the less and less I think we feel some sort of, this is about some of the religious trappings and what some people like to call woo-woo experiences. And so I like that idea of the fact that there's givenness there. It's a matter of just turning your attention, almost like pivoting your head on your neck.
Yeah, to add to what Douglas is saying, part of what you were saying, Bill, which was interesting to me, and somehow hadn't quite thought of it this way, but this pivotal moment, putting it in a kind of collective societal context, which is part of what I heard you asking. You know, the sentence there, the meaning of this suchness is not in the words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. Part of what that is saying, that pivotal moment, I've talked about the characters there. It's about the arrival of energy, this pivotal moment. So part of what it's saying is that pivotal moment is not something that happens outside us. That pivotal moment is about us. So yeah, I think that could also be thought of in terms of how collective societal events take place. There is change in our own lives, in our lives as communities, and in the lives of the world. And events happen, but they're not sort of something outside. We are part of the events, that dramatic events that happen in the world, and we're connected to them. And that these events. And then our response, our ongoing response to those events, help to make those, to form what the meaning of those events are. So yeah, I think that's true. This idea of this pivotal moment or arousal of energy or inquiry, all of that's implied there, is something that we bring to suchness, or that we are part of suchness and suchness is part of us. So there's a very rich idea there. And I appreciate your, you know, trying to connect it to not just what happens individually on our cushions, but also, you know, how reality constantly flows in the world. So thank you for that, Bill. Thank you for your
sure. And I think that just thinking of political thought for a moment, you know, I think there certainly have been tendencies in the tradition, but even much more, I think, in translations and writing about Buddhism for quite a while. To see ideas like thusness and suchness and emptiness and read them or think of them almost in terms of Hinduism or Western mysticism and ideas of some sort of pure essence, the point of the practice of realizing some pure essence behind things. And so everything is okay once you understand emptiness or thusness, and you can escape from the world in that way. And there's really, I don't think there's the slightest suggestion of that in either the scriptures or the practice tradition. The whole point is that we are thrown into the world, we are in constant relationship and interaction with other beings, and we must engage with them. We don't really have a choice, and there's a decision on how you're going to do that you make each moment.
Laurel, do you have a comment?
Thank you for your talk. I really enjoyed it, and I just wanted to point out that the first part of your talk would have just done fine as an Ecology 101, because that's what you learn in Ecology 101, that no organism lives on its own. It lives in populations of other similar species, and then with other in communities and so forth, and that it's not a static existence, but it's all evolving constantly, and I'm always thrilled when it's like the scientific underpinnings, as if we needed such a thing for suchness, and it was very beautiful the way you said it, so thank you.